Barbie will take the roll.
Chairman Cornish?
Here.
Vice Chairman Woodard?
Here.
Representative Mullery?
Here.
Representative Doubt?
Here.
Representative Gauthier?
Here.
Representative Grunhagen?
Here.
Representative Hilty?
Here.
Representative Johnson?
Here.
Representative Kelly?
Minutes.
Representative Kiefer? Representative Kreisel? Representative Leidiger?
Here.
Representative Mariani? Representative McDonald?
Here.
Representative Moran?
Here.
Representative Nornes?
Here.
Representative Slocum? Representative Smith?
Here.
First of all, happy Valentine's Day to everybody. And we'll bring the meeting to order. The Public Safety, Crime Prevention, Policy, Finance Committee, and Representative Smith, would you move the minutes of February 9th?
Mr. Chairman, so moved.
Okay, minutes have been moved for February 9th. Any comment or additions or corrections? If none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, minutes approved. Members, we have two bills today, House File 1956, Representative Anderson, and then one by myself, House File 2160. Representative Anderson, are you prepared to begin? Representative Anderson, I'll move your bill, House File 1956, for consideration, and it'd be recommended to pass and move to the HHS Reform Committee. Is that your understanding?
It is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hey, you can proceed any way you wish.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would like to start off just by saying that I remember when I was a freshman legislator, the rule was if you came before a committee, you had to bring treats. Mm-hmm. And given that today is a holiday, I thought I would bring some treats to share with you all. So. All right.
Applause from the other.
You got my vote.
They didn't applaud. I think the treats were bribery.
I figure it's better to keep you busy with something. Members, in all seriousness, though, today I wanted to bring forward this bill. It's about making sure that we maintain the program integrity that we have for electronic benefits for citizens that unfortunately can't afford food and so forth. So what this bill does, though, is it says that when law enforcement officers suspect that fraud is being committed with the use of EBT cards, that they share that information with the Department of Human Services. And this is just an attempt to make sure that we are not operating in silos, but instead communicating with one another so that we make sure that fraud is not being committed and that the precious resources that we have can be dedicated to those individuals that need the help. So that's what this bill does in a nutshell. And with that, I'll just stand for questions because I know your time is precious.
Hey, members. Trying to swallow my candy. Any questions? Who would start to put on this?
The amendment.
Do you have an author's amendment, Representative Anderson?
I do, Mr. Chair, and I believe that's in your folders.
Okay. Where is A1? All right, the amendment, Chair will move amendment H1956A1, author's amendment. Do you folks have it in your packets there? Okay, Representative Anderson, would you go ahead and address the amendment, what it does?
Sure, Mr. Chair. The amendment is a result in talking to the Department of Human Services in consultation with them. They ask that we include this provision because it gives them a better idea of what card is actually being used and held in possession, or multiple cards being held in possession by individuals. And it just makes their job of investigating fraud much easier. So that's to accommodate the request of the Department of Human Services. And they are here if anybody has any questions of them.
Okay, members, questions? Okay. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, gosh, I've never heard of anything like this in my life. And so I was just wondering, how many cases does Minnesota have a year? of this type of fraud, where people are holding on to multiple electronic cards.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Moran. I have the Department of Human Services here. They are more than happy, I'm sure, to come down to address that question. But certainly this issue was raised to me and I think to a lot of different members that received the email from an officer with Ramsey County where they see this on a regular basis of folks that have in their possession multiple cards. The law enforcement officials aren't sure if it is fraud, and it may not be fraud. But I think it's important for us to make sure that we examine whether or not it is fraud, give that information to the Department of Human Services so that they can investigate the matter and make sure that our resources that we have are going to the people that need it the most. But we have, if you can state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jerry Kerber, and I'm from the Department of Human Services, and I'm the head of what's the newly organized Inspector General's Office within the agency. I think the question was about how often do we see this kind of situation, and Mr. Chair and Representative Moran, we don't really know yet. I mean, one of the things that this office is going to be working on is working much more collaboratively with local law enforcement and with the U.S. Attorney's Office on these kinds of cases. And we have started an outreach with them, and we want to get more data and more complete data, and this bill is going to help us do that. And that's why we're very interested in this amendment. With this information being reported to us and getting the card number with it, we're going to be able to follow up much more completely on these cases and hopefully come back to you in future years with much more complete information on the extent of these kinds of cases.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mrs. Chair. So I think I heard you say you don't know of any cases yet. You don't have any numbers of any cases yet. In case it is happening and law enforcement is called or someone is stopped for possessing more than one card in their presence, you want to take this information of that person and they will be arrested. They will be charged. They will begin to have a record. And it has so many implications of the impact and the outcome this may have on a family for whatever reason, you know, whether it's, you know, a son who's shopping for their mother or someone who's shopping for an elderly person. I mean, there are many reasons, could be, why a person could possess more than one card for what purpose, but they are being stopped, arrested, and now they have a record. And we know once what happens once a person have a record and the impact that has on one person's life and livelihood forever. I'm just wondering, you know, where are we going with this?
Representative Marin, if I could interject here just before I turn it over to those. This isn't talking about arresting anybody. What this is a reporting requirement for some of this arrested on some other offense. There's no arresting of the person for this. This is a report of having more than one card. And as far as how often it happens, it's basically thousands of times. I got relatives that work at Hy-Vee and Cubs, and people often come through there with multiple EBT cards and getting on the phone and calling somebody and asking what the PIN number is. Law enforcement has complained to me quite a few times that troopers or sheriffs, when they arrest somebody, when they go through their driver's license, to find their driver's license, that all sorts of EBT cards extra. And so I think that the reason for the bill is the reporting aspect, to find out how much is going on, who's got the card, why, if they're the advocate for the person that has a card or something like that, and all that information I think would really help. But if I'm wrong, go ahead and
thank you, Mr. Chair. And also, can you also answer what would be the impact?
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could respond.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moran, what Representative Chair Cornish stated is true. This is not about arresting people for having possession. It's about the fact that they have been arrested for something else, and if law enforcement finds within their possession multiple cards or, you know, suspect that fraud is being committed, that there is an open communication with the Department of Human Services.
You know, so often government gets accused of operating in silos. We're removing one of those silos and making sure that there is a general conversation and sharing of knowledge and information so that we can make sure that these resources are truly being used by those people that need it the most. And I think that nobody can argue against that. But I didn't hear, what was your question that you had as a follow-up, Representative Moran?
What would be the impact from the department?
If I could just stop here for a second, one thing that I should have done before is we announced the amendment and moved in it, but we never voted for the technical author's amendment. So any discussion? If not, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Now it's in the proper form. Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair and Representative Moran, I would reiterate what Representative Anderson said, that these people are going to be, they will have been arrested for some other crime, and they are observed to have these cards, multiple cards. And it's in those cases that that information will be reported to the Department of Human Services. There are, as you suggested, legitimate reasons for people to have more than one EBT card. And so that is not a crime, certainly, and there wouldn't be an expectation that there be any kind of automatic judgment made based on that. And that's why it's important that this information get reported to the Department of Human Services. And then what we will do with it is we will figure out who is the legitimate card owner based on the number, and then we will make that referral for the investigation to the county. We'll notify the county who issued the card, who will then follow up and verify what's going on here. In fact, there was some suggestion earlier about maybe the card ought to be confiscated, given to the department, and that would suggest that possession of that card is categorically not correct, and that is not the case. So at this point, what we're hearing from law enforcement is that people aren't sure what to do with this information. And so what this bill does a nice job of, it provides that reporting mechanism to the department, and then we have the onus of figuring out if there is anything going on here that ought not be going on.
Okay. We have Representative Doubt, Gauthier, Johnson, and McDonald. Representative Doubt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing this forward. I had a conversation with a gentleman who's actually a jailer. And, you know, as we know, those are the people who end up checking people into the jail. And he said this is a big problem that they see. In fact, he indicated that almost everybody they see that comes into the jail has multiple EBT cards. And he's been experiencing a problem where he'll report it to his superiors and nothing ever happens. So I think this is a good bill. It's certainly obviously intended to protect these benefits so that they're there for the people that need them, and making sure that fraud and abuses aren't happening. So I certainly thank you for bringing it forward. I'll remind everybody too that what we did last session was to put the names on the card. In the past, the state of Minnesota has not had cards with the person's name on it, so it was very difficult for law enforcement to know whether the card belonged to that person or not. And if they had multiple cards with multiple numbers, you obviously know that they're not all issued to the same person, but you don't know who they're issued to. So it was very difficult to follow up on any of that. So now with the names on the card, hopefully that will also make this easier. But hopefully we can catch some of that fraud and abuse and preserve this money for the people it's intended for. So thank you.
Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, thanks for the chocolate. You've effectively destroyed my diet today because I have no willpower. To the testifier, though, I have a question. How reasonable is it to expect this to go from the police department to the department to the county in 30 days? I mean, how reasonable of an expectation is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gauthier, I think we can do that. You know, we have some other reporting mechanisms in place. So, you know, what this calls for is some kind of format that we'll establish, forms, in fact, and we'll figure out how we can do that. I think we'll have an outreach with law enforcement so that they know about this and they know how to where to report it at the department. And, you know, we have regular contact now with the county fraud investigators. So I don't anticipate that will be a problem.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grothier.
To the testifier. Somebody's picked up, they have multiple cards. The cards aren't, I think I heard you say, would not be confiscated and returned to the department, that the person would, upon release, receive the cards back. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just a comment. I guess my what troubles me is somebody has cards because they're, you know, they've been designated as the person's financial agent through SSI or whatever. And so now we have this hanging over their head for 30 days because they're officially a suspect. And I find that somewhat troublesome. And I would think in this day and age of technology that could go a lot quicker. And it clearly targets people who are struggling to get by as it is. And nobody's advocating they should be able to commit crimes. But sometimes I just wonder if we really think through what we're doing to people. And I think 30 days is just a long, long time to have that hanging over somebody's head, especially, you know, that number is given, it's in a computer, it shouldn't be that hard, and why it would take so long. And so you have maybe an elderly person who has who is a caregiver to a daughter or something who has a card, and so now she's spreading because she's a suspect for 30 days. And I just think fundamentally that's unfair.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the concern I have with the bill as it's written is that the titling of it, reporting welfare fraud, because no one's been convicted of fraud yet, and it's weighted with all kinds of connotations that are negative and that are hostile and that are demeaning. So, Representative Carlson, I have a problem with that aspect, or Anderson, I'm sorry, that aspect of it, and wondering if you'd be willing to amend the terminology, because none of us are interested in seeing illegal behavior occur, but I think this could be certainly framed in a way that's more respectful of the process. And the person I know has been arrested hasn't been convicted, but they have simply been arrested. So, you know, that whole due process is yet to occur. So I think it'd be more, if you'd be willing to amend the section title to reporting multiple possession of electronic benefit cards rather than welfare fraud. But what I heard from the testifier was that's the information he's looking for. I've heard no testimony to the effect that this is a widespread issue. But I think it's reasonable to collect that information if that's seen as important to the department. That makes sense. So would you be willing to amend your Section 1 to, in that respect, reporting possession of multiple electronic benefit transfer cards?
Representative Anderson, you can answer however you wish, but just so I'm clear, whenever it says offender, they're talking about not the offense of possessing. It's the offender they've already picked up and arrested that they're reporting, right? Okay, now go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Johnson, having a Johnson and Anderson and...
Apologize.
I understand how that happens. There's multiple Sarah Andersons, if you can believe it or not, too. So, very common name in the state of Minnesota. As far as your question, you know, I would be more than willing to change the section so it says Section 1, reporting potential welfare fraud, and I think that addresses the issue of concern that you have. So if that's okay with the chair, on line 1.7, after the word reporting, insert the word potential, if that works for you, Mr. Chair. I don't know what your rules are as far as your committee goes, but if I can't do it here, I certainly will take that under consideration, Representative Johnson, and we can work on that together.
Representative Anderson, you mean between report and offender's potential?
I'm on, Mr. Chair, on line 1.7,
Oh, I see.
After, it's in the title there, after the word reporting, insert potential, so it would be reporting potential welfare fraud.
Okay. What the research, you have any problem with that? Jeff or Mr. Deagle?
Mr. Chair, that seems appropriate if that's the will of the committee.
Representative Johnson, would that help?
It wouldn't help me, no, because, again, I think the whole issue of fraud is fraught with connotations that if the person hasn't been convicted of it, and there's what the purpose of the whole bill, as I understand it, is to collect information. I just think it adds some negative connotations that do much more harm than any good.
Would you be willing, Representative Johnson, just to work on it? As it's going to go to civil law, we'll work on it with Representative Anderson and figure out a fix between the two?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd be willing to talk to her further about it.
Okay. Sounds good to me. Representative, did you have anything else, Representative Johnson?
No, thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier from the Department of Health, just a question. If once the data is collected and there's evidence of perhaps fraudulent manners, is there a penalty then to that person that was already arrested from previous crime?
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, if there is a full investigation done and it is determined that this person, that there is criminal fraudulent behavior, well, then that would be prosecuted by the county attorney. If there's other inappropriate behavior being engaged in by the card holder, there's an administrative process for dealing with that as well, some of which results in penalties like being discontinued from a program for a year, on a second offense it's just 2 years, and a third offense it's for the remainder of their life. But it's after hearing processes, but there are mechanisms in place.
Mr. Chair?
Representative McDonald.
And then just a follow-up, and perhaps you're not, I don't know if you know this answer, but on the bill that was passed last year with that each EBT card should have the recipient's name, mm-hmm. Is the state reissuing EBT cards to those who are on the program now?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I believe the effective date for those cards being issued is yet to come. I believe that's going to be, is it July 1st of this year? Yeah, July 1st of 2012 is when those cards will be issued in that manner. And so that hasn't gone into effect yet.
And then just, Mr. Chair?
Representative McDonald.
Just to reiterate for my record, so the penalty, if there is fraud, evidence of such, and everybody has due process, I would imagine, the individual that's arrested, more than likely they've committed a crime. They've got arrested, and they're been detained. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I think there's going to be a separation of the issues here. Whatever led them to be arrested in this instance, you know, is probably going to be a separate issue than this possession of multiple cards that'll be investigated by some county investigators. And that will run its course. The issue of the benefit will run its course, probably separate from the issue of whatever criminal activity they were arrested for. So, I mean, doesn't necessarily need to be a nexus here for this reporting to occur.
Okay, Representative Smith, before I go to you, I just wanted to correct something I said. It's not going to civil law, it's going to HHS reform for Representative Johnson. And Representative Smith, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Of the author, this was not intended to be a follow-up question to Representative McDonald, but he did touch on this. I will try to ask the question in a more precise manner, Representative McDonald. Bottom line, author, in plain English, maybe a two-part question. What can, under federal or state rule, the Department of Human Services, what can they do if they determine there's just a multiple possession, or if a person is using more than one card? What penalties? Can they be terminated from welfare benefits and or what?
Mr. Herbert, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, at this point in this new position I'm in, I'm not the best person to answer in detail how this whole process plays out for a determination that somebody was engaged in behavior relative to their card that they ought not to have been engaged in. I know that there are both administrative determinations and then there are also criminal prosecution avenues to go. And there is a distinction made at some point based on what was the intent of the individual, was the intent to defraud. And that will more likely lead it down the criminal process, as you can imagine. There are other administrative processes in place for when somebody has misused their card. What this bill does is it triggers first the investigation into the situation, and then following that investigation, it would go whatever path is most appropriate for that case. It doesn't alter those remedies, but it gets them involved.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Smith,
I understand this is a reported. This is a bill that addresses reporting, but ultimately, my question remains unanswered. When the DHS makes a determination that somebody has possession of multiple EBT cards and or is using two different cards, can they lose their welfare benefits, which are meant to keep life and limb together?
Mr. Kerber.
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, it's not categorically against the law to have in your possession more than one card. There are situations where cards can be used.
Mr. Chairman, I hate to interrupt. Oh. I'm not talking about violation of law. I'm asking about the welfare benefits. Can they be removed if the DHS says somebody has more than one card and or is using more than one card?
Mr. Kerber.
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, yes. People can be terminated from the program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But just so we're clear on that, not just for possessing multiple cards. You'd have to prove that the multiple cards were in violation. There are certain instances where they can have multiple cards, but this is the start of the process. And after further investigation, you find out that the policy is being abused, then you could terminate it. In other words, if it was fraud, they possessed somebody's illegally, or they were using somebody's illegally without their permission, then I imagine that they're... Through my experience, anyway, and the financial officers at county level, when we report an abuse of rights, that they can be terminated, yes, and suspended for a certain amount of time, brought in for remedial training. And Representative Anderson. Okay, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, or Representative Anderson, can somebody tell me what the expected path that this bill will take through the process? Mr. Chair, you mentioned that it would be going to Health and Human Services Reform. I'm wondering if it's going to Health and Human Services Finance or if at some point there's going to be a fiscal note on this bill, because it seems to me we're asking the department to do something that could, at least according to Representative Dodd, who says that this is a very common occurrence, would trigger a lot of investigations that somebody's going to have to do.
Mr. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilby, actually, this is part of the process that the Department of Human Services is actually going through anyway. In conversations with them, their intent is to have conversations with local law enforcement officials to address this issue, because it's part of their purview and their responsibilities as an agency to investigate fraud. So this is all within their existing responsibilities and duties. So it's my expectation that this will go to Health and Human Services Policy, and then it will go to the General Register.
Representative Hilty, the answer.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that there clearly are implications in this bill that somebody's going to have to spend more money than they're doing currently, and I would suggest that it would be very appropriate to have a fiscal note on this bill at some point. If there isn't any additional expense, there isn't any need for the bill. And if there is, somebody ought to try to figure out what it is.
Mr. Walsh, do you have any clarification?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty, when the bill was scheduled for a hearing, I was not sure if it would have a fiscal impact to the department. I contacted the Department of Human Services and told them I did not see a cost in the bill. If they thought there would be one, to please contact me and I would submit a fiscal note request. I was contacted by the department and they told me they did not see a cost in the bill. That was on the original version. I do not have a copy of the amendment. I don't know if that changes the, and I'm seeing someone shaking their head in the audience, so.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair,
if
I could, in that case, I would like to hear an explanation from the department of why they think there's no additional cost in doing this.
Mr. Kerber?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty, the department right now has responsibilities in this area, and we have hotlines set up even for people to report fraudulent behavior. In this kind of case, what we would do, as I indicated, is the information would come to the department, and then we're going to do some initial review and then refer it for investigation at the county level. We currently have issued grants to county investigators, and there's 74 counties that are participating in this, and there are a number of people throughout the state who investigate this kind of activity. It's our understanding that this is not going to be a significant increase in their workload for investigation, but if that ends up not being the case, we'll probably be back in a year with some requests for additional funds for this, but that's not our anticipation at this point. We're investigating these kinds of cases already, and so this is sort of the same work.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative. Well,
basically, are you saying that if there is additional cost, that would fall to the county rather than the State Department?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty, it would fall to the county through the grant process, through the grants that we have issued to those counties. It's called the Fraud Prevention Investigation Program. It's about $3 million in grants that are distributed throughout the state, and so it would fall into that program.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Hilty?
If the allegation that Representative Dowd made that this is such a common practice that almost everyone in his jailer friend's experience would be suspect in this regard, it seems to me that this is something that would require more resources than is being anticipated.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to make a note to Representative McDonald and Representative Smith question around the person who were arrested, would they be eliminated or a penalty for them possessing a car? And I think we're making an assumption that the person who has been arrested is receiving child welfare support, because maybe they're not even receiving any type of support. But I'm not so concerned about the person who has been arrested as I am about the person who is the car holder and the impact that this may have on that person, as Representative Gautier touched on, that maybe the person who has multiple cars, one or two cars on them, may be for some reason has the approval to use those cars, whether someone is on Social Security, they're elder, whatever. So my question is, and maybe the reason that they have the car on them is legal or illegal, but what happens to the card holder as the department is assessing the person's continual eligibility? What happens there? You know, what is the impact on that person who have given that car to someone for a legal use as you are investigating their continual eligibility?
Mr. Kerber.
Mr. Chair and Representative Moran, there would be no impact on the individual, and I think that's a very important part of what needs to be investigated, is the, you know, who, and that's one of the reasons we were very interested in getting the number on that card, and so we can figure out who was the card issued to, what household was it. so there can be determination made about whether it's inappropriate for that person to have the card. It may have been lost, it may have been stolen, and those are the kinds of things that will be investigated. But in the meantime, it doesn't categorically impact that individual's benefits, certainly. And that's one of the reasons that it made sense not to talk about confiscation of that card, mm-hmm. because that card, you know, there may not have been anything wrong done at all, but it's just that it's a increasing observation that people have multiple cards, and it raises questions. And from what we've heard from law enforcement, they weren't sure what to do with that information, and so this provides a mechanism for them to report that, so these things can be addressed. We can figure out, is there even a problem here? If all of this information leads to some better understanding about how we can modify some of the requirements and policies about issuance of these cards, then we're hoping to capitalize on that information, come back with some recommendations after talking with law enforcement, but no impact on the individual.
Representative Moran.
So, Mr. Chair, and so it also may show that we or families are in a crisis, that there may be mental illness or disabilities or huge reasons why people are not able to shop or do for themselves. There's a lack of independence of people to take care of themselves and their family, so they are, you know, using others to support them in some type of way. But it is to have those findings.
Yeah. Representative McDonald, are you done, Representative McDonald?
Yes.
Okay, Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I want to indicate that I had never said that those who are arrested and have multiple cards should be penalized with having that card retreated. This is not made up by the boogeyman. There seems to be evidence that there could be the possibility of fraud on these EBT cards. Good politicians, long before I was here, came up with a good program to make sure the children were fed by parents and that they were taken care of. And now if there's certain people that are abusing that, then we'd be foolish not to address that. So these are, if there's evidence that there's fraud, then we have to do something about it and ensure that the card gets to the people who are supposed to feed their children. So by no means did I indicate those who are arrested and have multiple cards should be penalized. But with the department's help, if they find evidence of abuse, that means that that individual most likely has more cards than he should, and he's racked up thousands of dollars worth of taxpayers' dollars, and that's not getting to the hands of children that need it. And if we just ignore it and close our eyes, then shame on us. No one is saying that if they have multiple cards, they're going to go to jail and they're going to have their card restricted. But I think this is a good bill, Representative Anderson, and I think we'd be silly not to support this and to investigate it and ensure that the program that the good people here in the state of Minnesota instilled many years before us is implemented and well, that the children can be taken care of. Because unfortunately, adults make bad decisions, and they don't necessarily do what's necessary for the children to make sure they get fed. And this is a program that's working, but there's evidence that there's some problems. And let's pass this bill and get it done so we can ensure that those who are taking advantage of it and being fraud are penalized. What's wrong with that?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Moran, go ahead.
I do think it's very important that we prevent people from committing fraud.
Absolutely.
I think we could all agree with that. But again, my concern was more about those who have committed fraud and those who have given their card to someone to do the right thing will be penalized. So how do we protect the person who has not been arrested for holding multiple cards? But yes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Representative Moran, that, you're right, you reminded me. You did say that, and I remember thinking you hit a good point.
Yeah.
Those who are abusing it as well,
yes,
need to, those who are giving it away should be penalized as well. So my apologies for not endorsing that comment. You hit the spot. That's your accurate.
Senator Leitiger.
Well, I just want to add to it a little bit. It seems to me the way we're doing it right now, we're not checking the numbers of the cards, so we never do anything with, you know, those people that are deprived of that card, like in the case that you're talking about, Representative Moran. So it seems to me with this bill we're gonna be able to check all the numbers and at least be able to get back to those people, or at least we're gonna know, the department's gonna know who owns those cards, who they belong to. I mean, we do nothing right now. So at least we're going to know, and I suspect, although I don't know, if this information does eventually get back to the county, that can be tracked. People that are calling in asking, where's my card? I've lost it or something. It can be tracked, and we're going to know who actually owns these things. So I see this as something that is going to help those people that are missing their card because the fella got put into jail or whatever happened. So I see this is a very good step forward. It's probably something that should have been put in place many years ago. And I'm glad you're bringing this to the forefront, Representative Anderson. Thank you.
Representative Delp.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I think we might be, our discussion might be a bit beyond the scope of the bill here. This really is a very simple bill. It simply states that the local authorities who are arresting someone on some other crime, if they happen to notice that there's extra EBT cards, more than one, that information will be given to the department. So really what we're doing here is we're providing the department with the information they would need to go about their normal course of business in investigating these kinds of situations. And I don't think we should just assume, because it's not in the bill, I don't think we should assume that the department is going to be charging and incarcerating everybody who's got multiple EBT cards. That isn't in statute. It's not in itself illegal or against statute to possess multiple EBT cards. We've talked about that. This bill doesn't even suggest that that's the case. I think we could assume as well that this would give the department the tools it needs to replace the EBT card to the person that should have it if it's been misused. So we're certainly notifying them and giving them the tools that they need to make sure that these benefits are being used by the people who should be using them. We shouldn't just automatically assume that this is about things that aren't covered in the bill. So we're simply giving them tools, and that's what I see this bill doing. So I think it's a good bill, and I think we're a bit beyond the scope in discussing things that might be happening, and I think we should really just look at the bill and give the department the tools they need. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Representative Johnson, did you want to say?
Well, just briefly, Mr. Chair, to Representative Dowd, well, that's why I'm saying we shouldn't assume it's welfare fraud. If it's a utilitarian bill aimed at doing, getting some numbers on electronic benefit transfer card, why do we have to throw that kind of a connotation on the label of the bill? So I agree with your point.
Representative Anderson, in case you're wondering about your bill, we have a knack of if something comes in here, whether it's a controversial or not, by gosh, we're going to make it that way.
All right, we had somebody else.
That was your side this time.
Representative, or we had somebody from the ACLU here to testify.
It was
us. State your name and title and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Carolyn Jackson. I'm the lobbying coordinator for the ACLU of Minnesota. We are a privately funded nonprofit organization with over 8,500 members statewide. Our mission is to defend the Bill of Rights, which includes the Fourth Amendment's prohibition on unreasonable searches and seizures. There are three comments I'd like to make about this bill. The first one is that in many cases, people who are carrying multiple EBT cards are doing so because they are good neighbors. Transportation is expensive, and if you're going to the grocery store and you can pick up groceries for your neighbors and save them the cost of gasoline or bus fare, and you happen to be arrested for something else along the way, you should not be punished for being a good neighbor. And we want to make sure that people who are acting in a neighborly fashion are not punished under this bill. The second thing is, and this goes to the language, a peace officer must report. We're concerned when the police are hired to do the job of civil work. And we want to make sure that if this is a Department of Health and Human Services function, that we're not criminalizing behavior which would otherwise be handled in a civil manner. And it also goes to, we don't want to see cost shifting either. If this is something that's a responsibility of the Health and Human Services Department, we don't want to see the police being hired to do their investigative work for them. And finally, the other concern that we have is if this is something that they're finding incidentally to a different search, that's one matter, but we don't want a bill like this to be encouraging people to do searches for something which is not inherently criminal. So we don't want to expand incentives to do searches of people's wallets, and we're concerned that this might do that. So those are my comments, and I'll take questions.
Am I correct in assuming that now not only do you worry about people's rights, but also local government budgets and how they spend their money?
Yeah.
ACLU?
Yes, we are. Well, I mean, it's a concern, and one of the things that we see in other matters is higher governments depending on lower governments, especially the police, to do their job, which then criminalizes things which are otherwise not criminal because the police are there. Why not use them? Is what the way the bills often go. So,
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Ms. Jackson, I have a question, maybe two, and I just would gently remind you that a question can be answered with one of three ways: yes, no, or I don't know. And then you can fill in after that. If a person is legally arrested for some criminal charge, I don't care what it is, if they're legally arrested and in the process of inventorying their person before they're placed in a cell, holding cell, if they're found to have multiple EBT cards in their pocket, isn't it okay to transmit that information to the department that issued those?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, nobody else on the list?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anybody else to testify? All right. Any further discussion from the committee? Seeing none, the chair would renew his motion on House File 1956 be recommended to pass as amended and go to the HHS reform. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cornish, are you? Oh, that's me.
I just have one question left.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, if it's okay with you, I'd like to move House File 2160 be recommended to pass and move to civil law.
All right. Your bill?
Mr. Chair and members, this bill involves required fingerprinting. And just a short introduction, I'll turn over to my testifier. Sometimes when somebody comes in and our and I first heard about this when I was on the CrimNet board actually years ago. I was a member of that for a couple of years. Sometime when somebody is brought in for, let's just say, to court and under some charge, and from court they're released and they don't go to be booked and fingerprinted, it causes all sorts of problems in connecting the records up, and it causes a file to be put in suspense, and then sometimes it can take quite some time to get them out of that condition, and it messes up the electronic tracking nowadays. And so this bill would help to get more people fingerprinted at the proper time and match up with records. And it is slightly controversial, admittedly, and we'll have a couple of testifiers sort through some of the aspects of the bill. And now my testifier.
Ms. Engler?
Mr. Chair, members, Katie Engler with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And I apologize, the bill is quite short. The explanation is going to take me a little bit of time to help you understand how this works from a practical perspective. As Chair Cornish indicated, current law requires that when an individual is arrested on either a felony, a gross misdemeanor, or certain what are called targeted misdemeanors that you've designated, that they be fingerprinted. Well, sometimes people are arrested and the fingerprinting doesn't occur, or there is no arrest, but rather someone is charged. And if through the process in the criminal justice system, the individual does not go and have their fingerprints taken, or if there's a bad set of fingerprints, or if there are some data inconsistencies, the record can end up in suspense. And this is critical because the fingerprints are how a person's criminal history is built. And so, for example, I looked at a record recently of an individual who's making inquiry of the department, and when I counted, that individual had used 10 different names in the course of their conduct. And the only way that we know those 10 records are linked together is through the fact that the same set of fingerprints are associated with the offenses in each of those names. And so what the proposal before you today would do is give criminal justice agencies another tool to use to help solve this suspense issue. And from a practical perspective, what happens is that when an agency has a record in suspense, they have a number of different tactics that they can take to try to resolve that issue. They can resolve the data inconsistencies. Many times they send a letter to the individual whose record is in suspense and ask them to go and have their fingerprints taken in order to resolve that. And so what this proposal does is say, instead of being limited to solving the suspense record while the individual is in the criminal justice system for that record in suspense, the request is that you broaden it so that at any time subsequent to the suspense record, the individual is involved with the criminal justice system, that the record can be resolved. Now, the agency with a record in suspense has the obligation to make sure that the person whose record is in suspense is the person who they're asking to have submit fingerprints. They do this in a number of ways. As I said, they might reach out with a letter. They will compare booking photographs of the individual to make sure they have the right person. They will compare things like scars, marks, and tattoos that may be unique to an individual. Because without that linkage of the fingerprint to the offense, we don't necessarily have a complete criminal history record for that individual, which can affect prosecution. It also can affect sentencing if the individual is convicted. So with that, I would be happy to stand for any questions that anyone would have.
Thank you, Ms. Engler. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Of the author and maybe the testifier, the committee has in its possession a request from the Department of Public Safety Commissioner Ramona Doman, an appointee by Governor Dayton, requesting this legislation. That's correct, isn't it?
Chair Cornyn?
Ms. Engler? Understanding, yes.
I have it right here.
Okay.
So this bill then is not only sanctioned, but it's requested by the governor and his commissioner. The answer is yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I would just submit not only on its merits is it a good bill, but for Minnesota to succeed, we cannot let our governor fail. So I'm going to support your bill.
Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the testifier, I need some clarification. You said at any time the file's in suspense and any time they're involved in the process can be fingerprinted. What does any time mean?
Ms. Engler.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it means that if, for example, the individual is subsequently arrested for a different charge and it is discovered that there's a record in suspense, the agency with the record can work to resolve that suspense record because the individual is back in the criminal justice system.
Mr. Chair, so what you're telling me is we're going to fingerprint after the fact. I mean, how far are we going to go back? Are we going to go back 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? I guess that's what I want to know.
Ms. Engler.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we will go back as far as we are able to ensure that the person who's being asked to provide fingerprints is, in fact, the person whose record is in suspense.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, one question for Chair Cornish. I've heard a lot of bills in this committee based on if things are happening or perhaps they're happening. And so I'm just wondering, perhaps people who are buying guns for conceal and carry should, why aren't they being fingerprinted? I'm just giving you a bad time, Mr. Chair.
We'll save that for my next bill.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And whoever wants, I guess Ms. Engler probably. You said arrested or charged, and I'm thinking, I guess what I'm getting at is it used to happen more, but for instance, on North 26th Avenue, a lot of drug dealers used to be just packed there. They would do sweeps and arrest them. And sometimes they would decide, well, we don't have enough, and they'd release them before going any further. Once they got them downtown, they just release them. No charge or anything. So under this, would add then that they would be subject to either fingerprinting even later, not only at that time, but even later? I'm just trying to understand what this would do. It seems to be pretty broad on that it would allow that. Am I wrong?
Ms. Engler?
Mr. Chair, Representative, my understanding is that if an individual is arrested on a particular charge that is a felony, a gross misdemeanor, or a targeted misdemeanor, current state law requires that, in addition to that arrest record being created, that the individual's fingerprints be taken.
So, Mr. Chair, to follow up, you're saying that if they do a sweep and bring them down and then decide, well, we don't have the grounds to charge these people, we're not going to lock them up, we're not going to do anything, we're just going to release them, that the law says that they can't do that, that they have to hold them and fingerprint them? Even though they're basically, police are saying, well, we re-looked at this, we don't think we have the grounds for that. They were arrested at the scene. We have to, under our present law, they can't release them without fingerprinting?
Ms. Engler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, I'm looking at the beginning of House File 2160, particularly lines beginning 1.9. It says, sheriffs, peace officers, and community corrections agencies shall take or cause to be taken immediately finger and thumbprints, a number of other things, at the following times, 1.15, persons arrested for a felony, gross misdemeanor, or targeted misdemeanor. So if the arrest that you describe could result in a felony, a gross misdemeanor, or a targeted misdemeanor, then it appears to me that current law requires that those individuals be fingerprinted at that time.
Mr. Chairman, okay, just as a follow-up, I'm kind of amazed that if we have a peace officer saying, yeah, we arrested them at the scene, we had to get them off of there, we now see that we don't have anything against this person, we still have to fingerprint them then. That seems a little strange, and maybe that's the law, but...
Chair Cornish.
Representative Mummery, as far as I know, you can be arrested and unarrested. If you're in the law enforcement committee, could be clearer on that, but after you're unarrested, you can be arrested and then let go. I mean, it's at the discretion of the officer, I think, but what they're saying here is for targeted just for being arrested. You don't have to be convicted to take your fingerprints, but there's two places where it says on 1.15 you can be arrested for appearing in court or convicted of a felony, gross misdemeanor, or targeted misdemeanor. And then on 1.20 it says adults and juveniles admitted to jails or detention facilities. So your question would be, if you brought him down and you didn't, you decided you weren't going to arrest him, you got more information, you let him go, whether they could be fingerprinted or not. I'd have to ask.
Mr. Chairman, that's about it, because they obviously arrest him at the scene, or else they can't put him in the car and take him down. So they have arrested them. Otherwise, they're acting illegally, which I'm sure law enforcement's not going to do. So that's the situation, and I guess I'm getting a really strange answer, but that's apparently what the law is. Sorry.
Okay. Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier. So you're arrested, you're fingerprinted, and you're found innocent. What happens to those fingerprints?
Ms. Engler.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the fingerprints remain on file. The individual does have the right either to request under a statutory process, if they have no subsequent conduct, to have those fingerprints destroyed after the passage of time, or they have the right to petition a court to have their record sealed.
Mr. Representative,
Chair. So to the testifier, so the onus is on the innocent citizen and not on law enforcement to see that those fingerprints are gone. That seems backwards to me.
Mr. Chair, that probably question could be taken up in another bill, but that's been like that for some time. This bill is only the one thing that it affects, and I believe that's on 2.4 on the back side of the bill here.
Mr. Chair, I assume you're referring to just any offense and taking out the offenses in suspense.
Correct.
Thank you. Seeing no more questions, Ms. Engler, is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify in favor of this bill at this point? Okay, then I believe we'll move to Ms. Jackson, ACLU. Welcome, Ms. Jackson. Please state your name for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Carolyn Jackson with the ACLU of Minnesota. When I looked at this bill, I had to read it a couple of times to understand what it was doing, and it raised a question of basic due process. Due process under the law means a fairly steady thing. You get notice that something's happening, you get a hearing to see whether the problem is real. The decision maker makes decisions based on a set of defined rules, and then you have the chance to appeal the decision maker to a neutral body. And the way this bill reads, it's unclear what the due process is for linking the fingerprints with the back file. And there are a couple of problems with that. One is that the process isn't written out in the bill. And I talked to Ms. Engler, and she gave a pretty detailed description of what happens. So I don't know whether it's in rules with the BCA or what. There seems to be a process, but in the bill itself, the process for linking that person to the suspense file is missing. The second thing is that fingerprints change over time. So if this was a crime that was committed 10 years ago, and I've been in masonry, and my fingerprints have been rubbed off from cement and bricks, then my fingerprints today are not going to be the fingerprints that were 10 years ago when I had this previous arrest. And the due process, again, Ms. Engler said there is a process for this, but it's not in this bill, to show that when my fingerprint is taken today and put in this 10-year-old file, that it's the fingerprint itself is actually dated 2012 and not 2002. So these are due process questions. I don't know exactly what the solution is to that, but in the bill itself, they are not addressed. And that's my testimony.
Any questions for the testifier? Thank you, Ms. Jackson. Oh, Representative Grunhagen.
Representative Cornish, what did you think of the concerns that she brought up?
Mr. Chair.
Well, I think that the testifier doesn't even know if they're really concerned yet until we get some more answers on the rulemaking and the process of what happens actually to the fingerprint. So it's hard to comment. But and so I just go back to the original intent of the bill and to include another time where somebody can be fingerprinted to match up to the suspense file and better record keeping. So I guess along the way we'll probably keep checking it. Where is this going, civil law?
Civil law.
I'm sure they'll go over it in detail there also. And they're actually, they probably have more jurisdiction over this things right here than we do even in this bill, or at least equal to that for more inspection.
Thank you. Any other questions for the testifier? Anyone else? Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Anyone else like to testify in opposition? Mr. Neumeister, please come forward and state your name for the committee.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. I'm not as much in opposition. It's more of tweaking. Chairman Cornish and myself, Mr. Chairman, served on the same committee together. I'm still there. I thought maybe I'd come back and you guys took over power again, but now Mr. Woodard is the representative. If you look on page 2, line 4, it says any offense. One of the things that a lot of locals do is they fingerprint a lot, not just the targeted misdemeanors. Our targeted misdemeanors generally are domestic violence, maybe four or five others. There's a listing of them. But people are being fingerprinted on disorderly conduct and other kinds of things. So I do have some concerns then that the fingerprint comes in, not one that is asked by law to be fingerprinted, because as you all know, and as Chairman Cornish knows and others, that you all funded these electronic AFEs. They're they're called AFEs. I forget what they stand for. But you just put your prints on right there, and they go right up to the DCA. So there's a little tweak there that I just have some concerns about, because there's going to be more of an effort to collect fingerprints on small things that may not be able to do. Also, the second point I raised is the issue of technology. A great number of law enforcement agencies now are buying where you can do two print or two finger, three finger, thumbprint and a finger, electronic print. So my question is, would it have to be the full, 10 prints or 10 fingers, or could this trigger on one of the new two or three finger little automatic fingerprinting machines that they have now? So those are my questions. I applaud the effort. Representative Cornish, myself, and all the members of the CRIMNET Task Force I've been on it since 94 and 95, have consistently tried to get that suspense file down. It was high as almost 30, I think maybe 30%. But through your efforts and your predecessor's efforts, that has been eliminated now to, I think it's about, at the last meeting, about 8% now for adults. A little bit higher for juvenile, but it's 8% for adults. So what's happening, we're getting the right records to the right people, but I think it's also important to do it the right way. And so those are my two points about this bill. And I thank you very much for the few moments of your time.
Thank you very much. Any other questions of the committee? Chair Cornish, comments? Would you like to renew your motion?
Like Mr. Neumeister said, this is a problem that we're trying to take care of. There are still maybe some tweaks to do, but I just appreciate the support to move it to civil law, where I'm sure that's going to be looked at, a lot of scrutiny there, and maybe tightened up a little.
All right. Chair Cornish renews his motion to pass House File 2160 and be moved to civil law. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Committee members, we will not be meeting tomorrow. Our next meeting will be Thursday, February 16th, and this meeting is adjourned.